Now entering Nerdist.com.
By the way,
it's very different when you have promotional, like, PR for film, mm-hmm. which is PR for you as a human, which is weird.
Yeah, I guess it sort of
depends.
Right. I guess it sort of depends on
whether they read
what it is, and also what it is that you're trying to achieve.
Think beyond InStyle or Us Weekly. Yes.
Yeah, I don't.
They were always like trying to put me into like the publicists here were like, oh, we got you an InStyle fashion pages. I'm like, I don't want to be on InStyle fashion pages. It's the worst fucking taste in the world. Like, if I'm in that, then I've done something wrong.
So do you feel like it's important to look at whatever those magazines do and then do the opposite of that?
I just don't look at them. I don't feel good about myself. You know what I mean? Like, if you, like, at the nail salon, I feel kind of, like, dirty after reading, like, three of them at the nail salon. You're like, ah, I feel kind of, like, dirty right now because it's just human nature. You're like, oh my God, I can't believe they're doing that. And meanwhile, if they write about you, you're like, that's so fake. Like, that's not true. But, you know, it's just part of the territory. But I do a lot more work with European magazines, like the cover of like Italian Vogue, mm-hmm. Susan K, like a little Dazed and Confused, like the cool ones.
Yeah.
So I've like kind of broken off from like Hollywood publicist people. I look very dramatic right now.
Well, yes, you're wearing our...
Is this your grandmother's?
No, someone made it. It's our logo.
That's so sweet.
Someone made it and gave it to me at a show. Yeah. It's a big old like Afghan blanket. And that's...
I've gotten some interesting things too. So that's cool. I have had some interesting presents down the line.
What's your favorite one?
Probably, well, it wasn't my favorite because it was rude the way it was delivered. Someone broke into my car and left this big oil, and oil paintings, for stalkers, it's symbolic,
sure.
Right? Whatever they do. And I had these, like, I just was impressed by the amount of oil. I was like, wow, that's a lot of money for a starving artist. I'm assuming he's starving. I mean, I don't know how many rich people are stalkers, but
sure.
It had spikes coming out of my, like, nails coming out from behind, then with painted over white, like, it was really... That wasn't, like, the best one.
Right.
But it was one. Statues. Sculptures.
Oh, my God.
It is really weird when people start tattooing you on them, their bodies. And it's real weird with, like, your signature. You're like, dude, you're so going to regret that. You're so going to regret that. And people are like, I want, like what's a saying of yours? I'll get it tattooed on me. I'm like, no.
My saying is don't fucking get my name tattooed on your body.
My saying, let's be rational and think about this. Let's think it over.
And then it'll say, Rose McGowan, let's be rational and think about this.
Let's be rational and be like,
that's it.
That's it.
I saw you introducing Space Station 76 at the...
I was really nervous. I get nervous at public speaking.
Really?
Yeah.
You were funny.
I wouldn't think so. Thanks.
No, it didn't seem nervous at all.
Yeah.
That was part of it. Was it the last part of Outfest?
Yeah, it must have been the last part. Yeah,
yeah, because my friend Jack Platnick directed that movie.
Yeah,
it's and it's
great.
Fucking great
it's
movie.
It's great, and they dumped it, and I'm so mad at them.
Who dumped it?
The studio. They just fucking like, duh.
What?
Like, it was playing at the silent movie theater for one night, two nights. It's so fucked up. The production design in that, I thought, are we on?
Yeah.
No. We're on?
Mm-hmm.
Shut up.
Yeah.
We are?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for 5 minutes and 32 seconds.
Oh, I didn't know. Are you serious?
Yeah.
I had no idea. I thought we were just actually having conversations.
No, this is how the podcast works.
I love this. I thought I was like waiting for Morgan to come in. Okay. I thought it was beautifully. If you can see Space Station 76 by Jack Plotnick, he did a tremendous job. The actresses in it are tremendous and hilarious. Marissa Coughlin. But the set design, Patrick Wilson was brilliant. It was like, I read the script and it was like so much more was there and I loved it and I was really proud of him.
It's like the ice storm in space, kind of.
Right, except for you don't have Tobey Maguire getting killed, which is a pity because sometimes you want Tobey Maguire to get killed in a movie.
Not a Spider-Man, though.
Make it interesting.
I mean,
I don't like superhero movies just because they always win and that's dull.
Technically, Andrew Garfield killed him and took his persona.
Took his suit.
Mm-hmm. Took the suit.
Did he really?
Well, in the cinematic universe.
Oh, in the cinematic,
You could say that a version of that happened when Andrew Garfield took over the role of Spider-Man from Tobey Maguire.
One could say that.
That he had to defeat him.
He had to defeat him in a duel on the Universal lot.
Mm-hmm.
was a very small. That's how they cast people now. It's those cage matches.
Fight those cage. How amazing would that be? Right? See, like, Leonardo DiCaprio and, well, I'm not sure who else, fighting over something in a cage match. Maybe wearing, like, sumo wrestling outfits.
That would be a good, like, if there was, like, an actor MMA type of a thing. But I think most actors probably can't fight, even though they put that on their resume as a special skill.
Yes, I had some special skills when I first started, too. I have lost my special skills along the way because I realized nobody has ever asked me. See, on people on actors' headshots, it has on the bottom, for those who don't know, it says special skills. Horseback riding.
It's always horseback
fencing,
riding. Australian accent.
It's so, and then my favorite, I love the car washes in LA where they have all the headshots. You know, and I go to the dry cleaner, like, can you bring me a headshot? I'm like, no, I cannot.
We'll put you next to Judith Light from Who's the Boss.
Right, because that means I'll be faded in light, and it's just, I'm going to be one of those people in 20 years. I can't. Like, but it is. They're amazing time capsules of hairdos.
Yeah, and also time capsules of just who went there.
I know.
At random points.
I know. I live by Laurel Canyon in LA, and I love that Canyon Country Store because that was, you know, the purview of Jim Morrison and Janis Joplin. And yeah. It's got, like, such a great history up there.
Are there headshots up there?
There are some pictures of them. I wonder if Jim Morrison ever had special skills.
His special skills were doing bad poetry and getting fucked a lot.
I think he fucked more than he got fucked.
I think he did. Yeah, that's what I mean.
I'm going to put it that way.
I said it that way because I assumed it was effortless for him. So it wasn't even really him trying to.
He didn't have to try hard.
You know,
he was just him. And that was okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just that. And then the certain type of person just loves, like, a dude in leather pants reciting bad poetry.
I don't know that was necessarily bad. I had, I don't know why, it was really weird. We had a jukebox thing in the lunchroom at this one high school I went to for like a week. And I spent my entire free period before lunch putting in all of my lunch money to play Riders on the Storm, which is a very strange selection to have in a jukebox at a high school, right? So I played for the people coming to lunch that I did not like. I played Riders on the Storm every day for a full hour at lunch, and I was driving everybody mad because people would get there and try to have their music.
Amazing.
But no, I was like, Riders on the Storm. And these people are like, what the hell is this? People in Oregon are like, what the hell is this?
And you've
well, they don't have accents, but for my intents and purposes.
Yes, but spiritually, that's how
spiritually,
they sound.
Yeah. Like, and what I, because I moved from Rome to Backwoods, Oregon. That was my first place in America, and that was shocking. It was like gun racks, jacked up trucks, Oregon.
So you,
everyone thinks Oregon's all hippie, but
you were in you were from Rome.
I grew up in Italy. I was born in Florence. And
so there's gun racks on the back of Vespas.
Gun racks on the back of Vespas, because if you are not drinking an espresso at 4 p.m., they will take you out. They're like, oh, it's
and
on.
Then how old were you in Oregon?
About 9 and a half.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and no, so I had a solid. I grew up in a commune, so there's, you know, no electricity, no television, no movies, no, but a lot of books, and that's what trained me for acting, just reading. But going to Oregon was, America was a culture shock, majorly. I'd never seen fluorescent lights. I'd never heard loud, I mean, it was very different cars, huge cars, comparatively. Like any orange cheese, I'd never seen orange cheese. That's not natural. Like who decided on orange at what point?
Uncle Sam for American cheese.
Thanks, Uncle.
I don't know why. Cheddar? You guys didn't have cheddar in Italy?
It's white.
Oh. Yes, yellow.
See, it should be this weird orange because that's what it. I mean, I just wonder who started that.
The blanket around you is vaguely cheese colored.
It is. Actually, it's quite. It's a McDonald's theme.
Mm-hmm, a little bit.
And your microphones.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They totally are.
You've got a Ronald thing going on here.
God, I didn't realize we had a fetish, but I guess
I had McDonald's last night.
That wasn't. I haven't had in a while.
It makes me a terrible person, but I don't care.
I'm
supporting the man, one cheeseburger at a time.
I believe the first time I ever met you was at a karaoke bar in like the year 2000. And then I think for a period of time, you were dating a fella in our group, in our friend group. And so we would go bowling.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm,
I'm a really bad bowler.
At the now defunct Hollywood Star Lanes.
That's so sad.
It was such a great place.
It was so good. You know what was their downfall? And places that are cool always do this. Like after they did the Big Lebowski there, they remodeled. whenever places, like if it's like a little hole in the wall and it gets popular, they think, oh, we need to remodel now because all these people are coming. But that, they kill what the charm is.
Yep.
So we'll always have Lebowski, though.
So the lesson here is keep it shitty.
Keep it shitty and watch Lebowski.
Yeah, because that's where the hipsters want to go. The hipsters want to go to the shitty looking places.
You don't want to go to the Valley.
No.
No offense to the Valley, but it's, you know, it's... Yeah, it's or the Hollywood, whatever. It's I would prefer some downwardly mobile people around me.
I mean, they did turn it into a school, so I guess that's good, but
not if it's run by the LAUSD.
Touche. Yeah, but I miss the old Hollywood starlings.
Who was the person I was dating? Tell me out there. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Yeah. I was curious.
Yeah.
But I am a bad bowler. I'm good for about the two first frames, and then I get bored, and then I tail off. But what's the highest score you've ever gotten?
Me?
Yeah.
You know. Oh, 289. But my father was a professional bowler.
Are you lying?
No, I'm dead serious.
Oh, you're dead serious. Mm-hmm. Yeah, my dad's got a 289?
Mm-hmm.
And my grandfather, Stubb Moonen, was a, yes, it was a fantastic name.
That's a bowling name.
Stubb Moonen had every bowling award I'd ever seen. When I came to America, I stayed with my great-grandparents for a while. And Stubb was a no-nonsense kind of guy. But he was like, bowling was his heart and soul. And he was missing a thumb. On his bowling hand.
This guy just keeps getting more and more interesting.
Right. His name was Francis, but he thought it was too wussy, so he renamed himself Stubb.
So he cut off his thumb.
Thumb, and I was like, I'm Stubb. No, but all my magazine subscriptions come to Stubb Moonen.
That is
it's a fantastic name.
That should be... You have to...
Do something.
Something with
Stubb
it.
Has to be somewhere.
Stubb.
God, he was grumpy. God, Stubb was grumpy. He was exactly what you would, and always wore like this fisherman's red cap, like just this like, and the kind of eyes, glasses that double their eyes. Like,
yeah.
He was pretty scary.
Now why, first of all, what series of events led to your birth in Italy and then what brought
sex.
You? Okay, sure.
Primarily ultimately, between two people.
Between two people that made it a baby that happened to
form. My parents were involved in a commune thing, and Joaquin Phoenix and Rain and River, they grew up in the same thing, but in Venezuela, and I grew up in the Italian chapter, if you will, because it was a Jesus thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it got weird, so we escaped. You know, you're basic.
You escaped Italy and made it
escaped
to...
Italy, which I didn't want to escape. America was like, I do wonder how different my life would have been if I would have gotten to stay there. I'm sure I'd be married to somebody on a Vespa.
Yep. And you'd also be speaking Italian.
And I'd also be riding a Vespa.
Yeah.
Probably
yeah.
So, yeah.
And
speaking Italian, yes.
Do you think you ever would have discovered performing if you'd stayed in Italy?
Well, I never discovered performing. It discovered me. I was standing on a street corner on Sweetser and Beverly. Remember that old gym that was like, there was a gym on Beverly Boulevard that had all, I called it Butt Row. It was like all these Stairmasters in the window, but you drove by and you saw everybody's butt like as it was going up and down.
It's still there, I think.
Right, but now it's on the second
floor.
But this was just Butt Row.
Yeah.
It was like all you could see. And so I was visiting my friend and I was standing outside like with my arms crossed. I was like, I'm not going in there. That's so LA. So I stood outside with this grumbly face, and this woman came up to me and blah blah blah, and that's how I wound up acting. I needed money for rent,
and that was it.
And then I took the money for rent. I got a little apartment because I was gonna have to go back and live with my dad in Seattle, and that was not cool. Like, no, 19-year-old living with your dad. I mean, I lived on my own since I was 13 to 14, and then 15 I divorced my parents in court, got a job at a public relations firm, which is really weird.
So you could just divorce your parents when you're 15.
You can take them to court and do this. I represented myself, so that the judge was very impressed. I probably should have been a lawyer. I'd be a really good prosecutor. I would never be a defense attorney.
Why don't you... Have you ever thought about being on a legal show?
No, God, that would kill me. I hate procedurals.
Okay.
Ugh, that would be torture. No, and people are like, oh, but you could play it. You're like, yeah, that's satisfying.
Stubb Moonen, attorney at law.
Stubb Moonen, attorney at law. Yeah, and I would get like an old, no, Stubb Moonen, detective.
Detective, private detective. Okay.
Private detective.
Okay.
Maybe a crappy office on Cahuenga Boulevard with the old school like Raymond Chandler lettering.
Yep.
Nice.
And upstairs, a row of people on Stairmasters.
A row of people on Stairmasters and their butts.
You know, see, I think there's an interesting story there of someone who you're in Los Angeles, but you hate contemporary culture.
Yes.
And you're basically, you're an old-timey detective, and you refuse to, you don't have a cell phone, you refuse to use computers, you refuse to use contemporary
this
lingo.
This could actually be a really good like digital like 10-minute series, The Adventures of Stub Moonin.
Yeah. Yeah, just you being like, hey, I'm here to shake you down, you crazy mugs.
Yeah, crazy mug.
Ford Fairlane is a great movie.
It is a great movie. It's underrated.
It is underrated. It was,
I mean, it's ridiculous, but it was fun because it was ridiculous.
It was a fun movie.
I concur.
At the height of Andrew Dice Clay's popularity.
And then he made it into a Woody Allen film, so you never know.
You never know what's going to happen.
You never know. He's acting with Cate Blanchett.
If you can wait for 20 years...
Something will happen.
You might. Well, if you wait from 20 years now, you probably won't end up in a Woody Allen movie. But 20
years
from...
Wouldn't that be interesting? He'd still be casting himself against young women.
Yeah. Yeah, he'll be 95 and some 22-year-old girl be like, I don't know why I'm so attracted to you.
I don't know why I'm so attracted to you. Can I flop your jowls back and forth? Can I slap your jowls gently? You're sexy.
Yeah, that is, still, well, at least sometimes he has the good sense to cast people that represent him in
films. But I feel a sense of like, damn, like from him, like there's a sense of like, I have to cast somebody else to be me now because I've gotten criticized too much, but he still wants it to be him.
It's
so
hard.
It still lends like a, but he writes it. So,
you know. I mean, you know, he's a comic at heart, stand-up comic. And so he's, you know, as a performer, when you're as a comic, you always want to be the guy.
I think as anybody, you want to be the guy. I want to be the guy. I've always wanted to be the guy.
To do what?
In movies.
Just always the guy.
I've done so many movies, I swear to God, where I've gotten on set and I'm not the lead man. What? Like, I read the script and I think it's great or this or that or it's cool, whatever it is. But I generally read the man's role and forget that I'm not that.
Really?
Yeah. It's happened to me numerous times. I've stopped doing that. I woke up.
Did, at any point, were you able to convince him to just flip and give it to you?
Yeah. I've done three or four movies where it's been flipped to a girl for me. Literally, one movie, all they did was change the first letter of the name. And that was like, so it matters. Oftentimes, you really can be interchangeable with a woman, just like you can be interchangeable with race, and you don't have to say anything about it. But it adds a layer of complexity that wasn't there before.
Now, what is it that attracts you to that?
Like, look at Jodie Foster in Silence of the Lambs. How much more complex is that?
It's amazing. Because it creates the relationship between her and Dr. Lecter.
And just her and knowing her struggles being a female in the FBI, young female, like how much she has to prove and da-da-da, it adds this whole layer of complexity. And they didn't really address her being a woman that much. It just like happened to be.
Yeah. So
I think these things are possible. And going forward, I would like to play more men.
Do you have to audition a lot or do you just...
It depends on the situation. It really depends on who it's for. And I basically stopped acting for 7 years. I took off after, I've said this in an interview recently, I was on the cover of Rolling Stone and I was so repulsed, by what kind of I had been turned into and become.
Which was what? What do you think?
What did I turn into?
Yeah. What did you not like?
What did I not like? I didn't like the golden handcuffs. I didn't like make sure you don't rock the boat. Make sure you don't cut your hair short. Make sure you don't do this. I had an agent 2 years ago that told me not to speak too much in meetings because I was intimidating to the men. And that was from a female. So, yes, there's a lot of stuff.
You don't have to follow any of that.
I don't. Now. I don't do it. And I just kind of disappeared. I was like, you people, there's something deeply wrong there. There's something deeply wrong. And so I just left. I traveled the world. I did whatever I wanted. I did a couple of things here and there when I would come back to town. I was like, yo, I need healthcare. I don't know, because I'm living in Paris and it's fine. You know, I just traveled the world and did whatever I wanted. I went to Afghanistan, I went to Kuwait. I just do whatever I want. Basically.
What'd you do there?
So it's kind of I just did whatever I wanted to do. And that's basically like how I've lived my life ever since getting off. I was on a show called Charmed and, you know, I'm a gypsy. I'm an itinerant gypsy. It's how I grew up. It's what I like to be and what I like to do. And it was very difficult. So I would never get on a legal show. I would commit murder to myself. Would that be suicide?
No, not at all. I don't think so.
Is suicide not murdering yourself?
I guess it is technically murdering yourself. Yeah, it's self-murder.
Self-murder. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm glad I figured that one out.
It's a much more complex term.
It is.
So you
don't you think they should call shooters murderers? Now they call them shooters, like the shooter that makes them sound kind of badass. Like, in fact, mass murderers.
If they actually kill people.
Yeah, which they usually do.
Yeah.
fairly successfully often in this country.
I think it just specifies that they're a shooter as opposed to a swordsman.
I think this is true. I think fencing is the new scourge on America. I think these French people with their épées.
They're coming in here with their mesh face masks.
And they're trying to hit me in the heart.
Which I'm sure has a name.
Yeah, what is that?
And they're almost ballet-like grace as they try to plunge a foil.
I actually want to start that so I can now... I want to do like old school resume and put special skills on it now and see how that go for me. I don't know what my special skills would be. Baking red velvet cake. none of my special skills that I previously listed were in fact true.
Fencing, typography.
Yes, I think we're multifaceted. Wood cutting. Stubb was a woodcutter.
Of course he was a woodcutter.
He would make owl clocks with googly eyes that would circle around.
Oh my God.
Stubb was awesome.
Is that how he lost the thumb?
Maybe in his wood shop. He did lose it in the wood shop.
It might be in a clock somewhere.
It might be in an owl clock, ticking, ticking away, rotten.
So you'd be okay if you were just like, yeah, fuck this. I'm just going to live on a commune again for a while.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, except for I'm not down with communes, but other than
No.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
I mean,
no.
That you
if
could just...
I was doing, my life has had a lot of chapters way before Hollywood. I'm actually writing an autobiography of starting it, but it's from 0 to 19.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And then is there going to be another one? That's,
yeah, at some point. I'll blow the roof off of this place. Wah, wah, wah. Watch out.
When was Doom Generation?
That was 95. I was a baby. I lied and said I was, because I was actually 17. I lied and said I was 18 to do it.
Yep.
And then 19 was Sundance.
Wow.
And I went there and I had enough money from Doom Generation to get an apartment and go find Napoleon's grave. And then I came back and they're like, yo, you have to go to Sundance. What? What's that? Like, I know.
Go to Sundance.
I was like, what is that? And then lawyers are giving me their cards. And I was like, piss off, you old creepy troll. Because I thought they were just trolly people.
Right.
Which I could have been right about.
You were probably right about that.
I was probably right about that.
Yeah.
But no, everything changed. And, you know, within 2 years, you know, I did Scream. And then you become world famous. And then you're trapped. And then you have a thing where... You know, so many people would give their eye teeth to do what you do, so you never complain. And, you know, I'm Irish, hardcore work ethic, you know, show up, pull up your bootstraps, march on. And when you work so much and so often, you don't raise your head and think, what do I want for my life?
Right.
And I got really, really trapped in a life that kind of not of my choosing in a way.
But ultimately...
Not as a victim. I did it too, but I got so brainwashed into like, don't cut your hair because they have to be able to see you in different roles. Don't do... You know what? Nobody can see you in anything until you like... bash him over the head. So it doesn't really matter what I do, I figured out.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it is possible when people are like, do this, don't do that. You know, you can go, well, I'm going to do this. And
yeah, I'm going to do whatever I want.
That's not okay, then I guess it's not okay.
Yeah, it's basically been a really great period for me this last 10 months since directing. I have three directorial, you know, things in the works and three shows, docuseries I created, which is great. I'm singing again under my own name. So I sang under different names for a long time for soundtracks because of actors would get made fun of for singing. But
you were worried they'd be like, people would be like, oh, what are you trying?
It was right when Lindsay Lohan was singing. So it wasn't really a good time. The climate wasn't conducive to artful singing. Say
what name did you sing under?
Just, Bubbles McCoy.
Oh, Bubbles McCoy is great. Bubbles McCoy is Stubbs'
wife. Bubbles McCoy is actually a Clara Bow character from a silent movie. She was kidnapped by Indians in a movie called Call Her Savage, and they named her Bubbles McCoy, as the Indians would. Later, she was saved by a white man, and all was well.
Old Hollywood.
Oh, Hollywood.
Here comes the white man to make everything woo-woo. Okay.
Yes.
How was your, you have a short film, and when did you decide that you wanted to start directing?
It was, you know, I actually don't really like short films as a medium. I wanted to make a film that just happened to be, and I did, that happened to be 18 minutes long. It's pretty harrowing. I don't know if you got a chance to see it.
No, no one sent it to me.
That's a pity.
Can I have it?
Yeah.
The movie?
He hasn't seen it.
Yeah, please.
So it was up for the Grand Jury Prize at Sundance, which was amazing. And it just finished its Oscar qualifying run, so fingers crossed.
Oh, shit.
No, it's serious.
That's fucking really serious.
No, this is like really serious.
And then is this something that you want to keep doing or something that
yes.
you thought, oh, I just want to...
No, I actually had two writer friends that just said it's time. And I had been gone for so long and I came back and, you know, I fell in love with an artist and my father was an artist and I grew up in an artist community, and you forget that when you're here. You're surrounded by, you know, agents, managers, lawyers, publicists, blah, blah, blah. And you forget the art side of it.
Well,
you
yeah,
get
because
really caught up in just trying to get a job,
of course,
just,
because
or how to promote the job, or how they're going to sell you, or how you become like a commodity, and you become part, you know, in, kind of in collusion with them, and it becomes the overriding and most important thing, and it's just not.
You become overcome. You get swept up in the commerce.
And my thing is really just that I learned so much of what to do by what not to do. I would study the sets, I would study this, and I studied film since I was four as my father. I'm a cinephile. I hosted a show on TCM for a year with Robert Osborne. I'm on the board of the North American Film Noir Society with Dennis Lehane and James Ellroy. I roll hard, I roll privately. And
on I roll privately. That's a fucking tattoo.
There's
saying.
A saying, Rose McGowan.
I roll privately, but I roll hard.
And I bring it a lot in other areas of my life. I just didn't concentrate on acting so much because it was like the least consequential and least interesting to me.
It's funny to me that
it doesn't mean that I don't like parts of it, and it doesn't mean that I'm not good at it, because I am. It did take me a long time to figure out that fantasy is not my favorite milieu.
Mm-hmm.
I like fantasy stories that, you know, like you could say Gravity is a fantasy, but at the same time, it could have taken place on Earth just in a different situation. I like things where it's all like kind of reality based. There just happens to be like Game of Thrones, I'm super down with, but the dragons interest me the least. Whereas most guys are like dragons.
I'd be one of those
mother
guys.
Of dragons.
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 I like dragons.
And I totally understand that.
Okay, so in your...
I'll take Count Drogo.
In your gumshoe...
Detective Stubb Noonan.
She's not going to have a dragon.
She's going to have maybe a Pomeranian. That's a dragon. I have an evil Pomeranian that I hate. Would you like her? She's a horrible animal.
Why do you hate her?
Because she's evil. She's literally the devil. I have to get her out of the closet every day. And she attacks me, so I have to put sweaters over my arms to keep her from attacking me.
Oh, no.
She was really tortured, and I always heard, you know, rescue dogs are so grateful. Not her. Not this one.
This poor...
No, I was telling your producer, she humped her toy recently for 2 hours and snapped her ligament in her leg, and I had to pay $9,000 for the surgery. And then 6 weeks of aftercare in this cage, wherein she would attack me every time I had to take her out to the bathroom. So it was just been a really... It's been a great animal experience for me. But I just got an 80-pound dog named Mrs. Noodle, so maybe Mrs. Noodle can eat her and solve all my problems. Just kidding. Animal rights people.
What's the Pomeranian's name?
Sasquatch. Her name when I got her was Tina. I was like, I was like, I can't be an actress with a purse dog named Tina. I'll kill myself.
No, so you have to name it Sasquatch.
Sasquatch.
It's interesting that so you left acting for 7 years, and then for some reason, when people don't see you all the time, they probably go, "Hey, what have you been up to lately?" It's like, "Hey, I've been doing a lot of shit."
I do is off camera, and that's cool. I actually learned how to live my life as an adult off camera because I grew up being other people. I grew up in my off hours. That's when I got to be me. And what did I do in those off hours? I studied the 10 pages of dialogue I was going to have to do the next day when I was pretending not to be me. And you know what? Me's a pretty fun thing.
Well,
I'm pretty
good.
Down
most
with
people,
it.
Most people don't like themselves.
No, I'm pretty all right. Everybody dislikes certain like warts about their characters, and you know, if they're thinking people, I would hope so, and things they want to improve. But by and large, it's pretty fun. By and large, I'm having a blast. And so I came back and I thought, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this as an artist. My husband's an artist, really major one. And just hanging out with an arts community again, I was like, oh my God, that's right. This is what was missing, the artistic component of it, the art of the art. And we forget that here. You know, we forget that we're contributing to what we're doing in entertainment is basically mirroring society in a lot of ways at its highest level, its purest level. And we are living museums. These are our living images that reflect culture. I mean, Stanley Kramer put Sidney Poitier in movies before the civil rights movement, you know, like before it even really took off, before they were like, they still had like coloreds enter through the back, and he was putting him in Guess Who's Coming to Dinner. We can't affect change. And so I'm about that.
Do you feel that traveling so much and kind of just doing whatever you wanted to do and find your way, do you feel like that made you sort of fearless, or were you always kind of fearless?
Always. My dad's nickname for me, which for some reason he didn't tell, he told my sisters they could tell me after he died. like because it would go to my head or something. I have no idea what his logic was, but it was the brave one. I left when I was 13. I ran away, and I've pretty much been just trucking along, fighting it, fighting life ever since. And it's been a lot less of a fight lately, not because it's just less of a put your dukes up.
Yep.
And it's more just having fun and having experiences, which I always had. I mean, during like the periods when I was being other people, when I wasn't being other people, I was having amazing experiences. And I've gotten to live my life on a global stage. But that started before Hollywood too. I lived all over Europe and Russia and like all sorts of different places.
What's your favorite place?
Italy.
Italy's your favorite? Which part?
Umbria, a little town called Todi is one of my favorites, and a little town called Agello, and Perugia is beautiful, except for what they did to Amanda Knox. But other than that, don't get in trouble with the law in Italy and you're okay. Because they will bring up witchcraft in your trials. For real.
What was Kuwait like?
I didn't like it. Kuwait, the conspicuous consumption actually made me kind of nauseous. It was so, I mean, they just have so much money. They literally don't know what to do with it. And so there's like the month of, I think it was Ramadan. I'm not sure, but there's where they're supposed to go out, and I could be messing this up, but they're supposed to go out into the desert and commune with, you know, get back to their roots and da da da. But so I'm driving in a Humvee thing down their main highway, and I see like flat screen TVs and big, beautiful tents and giant ornate couches and basically people's living rooms all for as far as the eye could see in these deserts on the side of the road. And that was because for that month they transport all of their riches and their flat screen TVs and everything to there. And the only people that weren't Kuwaitis, and I met some great lovely people, but were basically almost slave labor. So it's a very strange place. And the McDonald's delivers. Like they deliver because that's how much money they have. Like McDonald's, you will come to me. Everybody like fast.
Does delivery person dress like a clown?
I would hope so, because I think they could afford to make them dress like clowns. I mean, it's pretty intense to be around that kind of wealth.
Do you think comfort is the downfall of society?
I think if we went back to hair shirts, we as a people would be much better. If we like self-flagellated, I think we'd be honest.
Oh, you think so?
Yeah. You know. And I think right now, if we're sitting on some hard like stools with some splinters in our butt, I think that would be really awesome.
Yeah, to live like Stub lived.
To live like Stub lived.
Stub would probably not appreciate
any of this shit. Stub would not appreciate. Stub would, no. He could kill you with a look. And he scarred me. He said I was the worst dishwasher loader he'd ever seen. I was like, that's the one comment he gave to me in my childhood that was, you know, stuck.
Then it begs
the
question.
Right.
It begs the question, how many were on that list?
A lot. A lot could have been on that list. I was trying. I was not the easiest kid, I imagine, because I had a mouth and a voice and I would, you know, I remember being three and they would say, are we not supposed to talk about anything serious? I don't know. They would say like, have you let Jesus into your heart? And I would say no. And so that pretty much set a pattern of being in trouble all the time.
Do you think,
and it wasn't because I didn't believe, I just didn't believe in theirs.
This might be, this might be too personal a question, but do you feel like in a relationship, you said you were married, but in a relationship, do you think your significant other has cause to worry in the sense that, it sounds like when you are unhappy with whatever the current state of affairs, you leave. You left home, you left acting, you left, like, you just take off.
That is a very good point, and you're possibly correct. I think Davey should worry. That's the pattern of my life. It was a pattern, it was what my parents did. I went to 10 different schools in 11 years.
Wow.
Moved all over the country. I would be home for 2 weeks somewhere, and I'd come home, and there'd be a plane ticket that night to get sent back somewhere else. It was very peripatetic, but I love leaving. And sometimes I like coming back, but I love leaving.
You like leaving
thing.
More?
Anywhere. I love leaving anywhere, and I get somewhere, and I want to leave, but I have a grand time until it's time to leave.
So you could just get dropped off anywhere and just find and figure it out.
I have been in some pickles. Don't get me wrong. I have been in some serious pickles.
What's a good pickle that you're willing to share?
I got trapped on a small island in Turkey. It was the vice prime minister, whatever they want to call him, that I got trapped on this island by somebody saying, there's a 5-star luxury resort in this tiny island in Turkey. Come. And I was like, all right. And 5-star is really a sliding scale in some countries.
Sure, sure,
right?
Sure.
A kid got electrocuted in the pond pool thing. A Russian possible hooker died in my arms after swimming into a nest of jellyfish.
Oh, my God.
We got trapped into watching Cirque du Soleil of Turkey perform every night while the vice president sang with them.
I think they call it Turk du Soleil.
Turk du Soleil. That's a really good one.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Stub would approve.
It's the only thing you'd approve of.
It was reduced to stealing bread rolls because it was a lot of Russians. And it turned out to be primarily Russian mobsters or whatever, billionaires, however you want to go with that.
Sure.
And their female hired counterparts. And so they ran out of food for people that weren't rich and Russian. So I was reduced to waiting for the Russian guards, like machine guns, to turn so I could steal a bread roll. I mean, it got and it had to eventually get airlifted out of there.
Are you scared at this point, or are you like,
no? I thought it was hilarious. I mean, I wasn't scared. I was like, oh, for corn's sake. It's like, here comes another thing.
Ah, for corn's sake.
My husband's like, you have to stop saying that.
No,
why?
You don't.
I like it.
You have to add it to this gumshoe.
I read a lot of English lit, a lot of old English lit, and a lot of, and I have strange sayings that don't have no place in my society.
Crumbs.
Oh, for feck's sake, lad. God, get me the apple crumble.
What are you doing over there on that Turkish island with all those prostitutes and Russians?
You know, and they had a nightclub made out of ice.
What?
Yeah, it was amazing. It was a great experience.
I mean, listen.
And then from there, I went and I got stuck. I got a Saudi Arabian woman that I'd met who has the largest wooden yacht in the world. Invited me then to be on her yacht, so with this other kooky girl, and I was like, all right. And then she got jealous of me and had me locked in a compartment for 3 days underneath, and I survived on my Cadbury's that I had bought at the Turkish airport on the way in, thank Christ. Then I went from there to Vogue Paris to do a Parisian photographer called her, and I heard this photographer, and one of her employees snuck me out at 4 a.m. on a, you know, it's called a tender, which is the little boat they take you away from yachts with. You know how that is.
Yeah.
And
I think everyone's got a great...
Everyone's got a great tender story.
Well, now tender stories are really disgusting.
What does that mean?
Don't you have the Tinder app?
Oh, Tinder. And this is Tender.
Oh, well, forget it then.
No, I do not have the Tinder app.
I don't either.
No, I'm... Are you lying?
No, I'm dead serious.
No, I see no reason. Even if I wasn't married, I would just...
Like, bleh.
I'd be way too embarrassed.
You've been locked in a giant Saudi Arabian ship.
Yeah, Tinder doesn't do much.
It offers no mystique to you
no
whatsoever.
No mystique. It's not that interesting. I'm like, pal, this isn't as interesting as my stuff. Not by a long shot.
I am fascinated by the fact that you don't ever seem rattled by any of this stuff. And I'm getting, like, anxiety stomach pains just hearing about, like, oh, she's trapped. How's she going to get out of there?
Well, that was my criteria, and I failed at this point. I was like, whoever I marry has to basically have the mental acuity and wherewithal to get me out of Guam should I ever get stuck there. And I've probably, not that he doesn't have the mental acuity. I don't know if he would know how to go about it, and doesn't have the wherewithal to get me out of Guam, my husband, so I'm totally screwed. But I was supposed to go to Guam last year, actually. It didn't work out, sadly.
See, you don't even really have to, like, this detective thing that I'm very adamant about,
okay,
that you should do is just basically, I think it's a fun way to express the story of your life through this character.
There, yes. And then there's the time I got locked up with a meth addict who tried to stab me with his needles.
Jesus Christ.
You know, stuff like that.
Where was that?
Seattle.
Oh, okay.
In a basement.
Oh, my God.
With tinfoil all over the windows. And someone's like, do you want to go to my friend's house? Okay. So you just go along with things. Not along, but I know that within 2 days of going anywhere, something odd is going to happen. And that's fantastic.
See, you are open to those experiences,
completely.
But I am very sheltered from those experiences. So if someone said, hey, do you want to come to my friend's place? I'd be like, no.
Afghanistan was the happiest I ever was.
Really?
I have a picture of me on a Black Hawk with like a smile from ear to ear. Like the biggest smile I've ever had. Like it hurt. I was smiling so much.
What'd you love about it?
It's just, I don't know. I just don't have that fear component. I do like, I dislike heights, you know, I get vertigo, but I jumped out of a plane because it annoyed me that I was scared.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't like being afraid of things, and I don't really see, I can pretty much talk my way out of most things.
Well, I think that having that confidence, what do you think confidence is? I'll tell you what I think it is, and then you
okay.
tell me what
okay.
you, I think confidence is not necessarily the, hey, I'm more awesome than everyone else. I think confidence is about having options. And if you feel like you have options, then you're very comfortable because you feel like, well, no matter what, at least I can do this other thing. And that makes you comfortable. And then that seems to exude confidence.
I think that's a good way to put it. I certainly don't think confidence is the I am superior or I am this. I think confidence is being able to handle yourself and just roll with the pickle and just know that you may not get out alive, but okay, then you had a great run. And I hope you go out in a big splashy way.
So it doesn't, like, that doesn't freak you out at all?
No. Like, really, actually, it doesn't.
I
race cars. I do all sorts of stupid things.
But maybe not stupid, as long as you...
I have a huge smile when I drive fast. Like, that's what it's about for me, those moments where I can just laugh like a nut because I'm so enjoying the stuff that you're basically not supposed to do or not allowed to do. And I don't like being allowed to do anything.
Is the rest of your family like that or is it just you?
Pretty much just me. They're all really intrepid. 5 out of 6 of us ran away before the age of 15.
Oh, so, my God.
Yeah. But don't worry. Like, my sister's a rocket scientist. My brother flies F-16s. My other brother, he just got a PhD, actually. My other brother is... I just heard he was learning to drive an 18-wheeler, and I was really confused because he's a doctor. And what? But he's actually a better human than I. He's getting all this radiology equipment and going to be taking it on his 18-wheeler. He's learning how to drive to reservations to work with, you know, people there that need medical care that can't get anywhere. And I thought, you are a much better person than I will ever be. I'm going to go on a yacht now and talk to you later.
I'm going to go get locked up on a yacht.
I'm going to go get locked up on a yacht.
Somewhere while you're delivering medical.
My 2 yacht experiences didn't go that well. I was on Paul Allen, so my ear popped and almost like killed me. And then the Saudi Arabian woman. So maybe that's a
sign. Why did your
sign.
Ear pop on the...
Because it goes down so far.
Oh, his yacht down.
He has a helicopter in the boat.
What?
Yeah.
What do you mean there's a helicopter? How's that possible?
Inside of the boat.
That just, like, basically...
Inside of his giant yacht, which is, like... And you have to listen to him play and sing with his band. That's the price of admission. I'm like, oh, yo, really? No,
this is weirder than the time I went to that basement in Seattle with the tinfoil windows.
Oh, what is this fresh hell?
Do you write any of this stuff down?
I do. I'm writing a book right now.
Well, okay. But
I have. No, and I have a long-range memory. I have bad short-term memory, but I think they've done studies. There's like 2 kinds, long-range and short-term. And I have an excellent long-range memory. I remember 3 and on very clearly.
And so this is going to be the focus of the book.
The thrust is just, you know, just the random, you know, I used to like crisscross the Northwest by turning myself in at police stations and saying I was a runaway. And they would buy me a bus ticket home. So I would just think, okay, I'm going to go to Idaho now. So then I'd just tell them I was from somewhere in Idaho and go to Pocatello.
And they didn't ask? Ever?
No.
They didn't check?
Who are they going to check with? I said, my parents aren't talking to me, but I know I can get to them by the time. I mean, believe me, a sob story. I honed and refined my sob story.
That's very resourceful. It would never occur to me. How did you figure that out?
Very resourceful. Because I'm smart. And I wanted to travel. And I thought, well, I'm homeless. That's a pickle, and I don't want to be on a, you know, I don't want to be in some creep's car. No, thank you.
You know, I almost think it's more challenging than, did you ever watch Survivor Man?
Is that the naked one?
No, so that's Naked.
I saw Naked and Dating. Naked.
Yeah. Let's get naked.
That's about as outdoorsy as I've gotten on my TV shows.
Survivor Man is basically, it's Canadian, right, Kyle? It's a Canadian guy named Les Stroud, and they just drop him in the middle of some...
So is he like the real Bear Grylls kind of thing?
Yes.
Or I like Bear Grylls a
yeah,
lot. But.
Yeah, but you are the sort of real-world counterpart to that, which I think actually can be more challenging because you have to navigate other people as well.
Other people and with no money.
Yeah.
None. Like collecting cans. And well, I did break into my mom's house through the cat flap and stole a bunch of Christmas presents and pawned them when I was 13. I thought that was pretty intrepid.
What'd you do with the money?
Bought Taco Bell and food. And I got then went to the police and told them I was from Portland. And they got me a ticket from Eugene to Portland. And from there, I actually owed this stripper that I was living with named Tina, coincidentally, just like Sasquatch. I was living with Tina and 3 drag queens, and I owed her money for the light bill. So, you know, that was what that $77
Did she try to attack you every time you tried to get her out of the closet, too?
Only on the stage. No, she was very nice.
What do you do when you're 13 or 14 on the road?
You meet people instantly and they become your weird Insta family. For real. Like, I met this girl. I escaped from this hospital I was locked up in. And
you just casually throw these things
out. I know. Like, but there's so many stories behind every story that it's like, I'm not even going to get into it.
You're like the Winchester Mystery House of stories.
I really, it's like the he-begat section of the Bible. It just keeps going. So I won't bore you. But I instantly made a best friend at this little coffee shop, and she pierced my nose in the bathroom, and we were besties, you know, since then. And so we would tour around together, and then some bad stuff happened to her. And then I met a boy in a coffee shop, because you can go for, you know, buy a dollar of coffee and then you can refill for 25 cents. So thus, if you're homeless, it pushes down hunger pain. Now, my homelessness wasn't like looking shitty. Don't worry. That was not my homeless. I was fierce. The people I lived with, we would go to Goodwill and I would dress up like Charlie Chaplin, or I'd wear like little men's 40s, 30s suits and dance on gay nightclub stages all night long. Take acid and just dance. Oh. And that's what I would do at 13.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
And what is your brain?
It seems to have survived.
You seem fine.
Thank you.
Are you fine?
I think so.
Do you still... Or what if this is all just a weird manifestation of
this
a drug trip you're having on stage when you're 13?
Flash forward, right? You what might if still I'm still be, on stage?
You might still be 13 somewhere, like in Albuquerque on some weird stage.
But don't you think that, I mean, I do feel like time-space. I don't know that I believe in past lives because I think everything's concurrent, but all in different time zones. I feel like there's bubbles of life going on and you can push against each other.
I feel like if someone's going to find it, you will.
I will.
You'll find the bubble. For corn's sake, I'm going to find these time bubbles wherever they are.
I'm going to find these time bubbles.
Come here, you blasted time bubbles.
You blasted.
What else do you want to do? It feels like you've done a lot of stuff. What's left?
Movies, more movies to direct. I'll send you mine so you can actually see it.
I'd love to see it.
It's not allowed to be the Academy rules that it can't be shown publicly yet, other than at the theater. I curated a film festival around it, which was really fun. I played like Carrie and Silence of the Lambs, The Parent Trap, which after you see my movie, you'll see why that was... pretty messed up choice.
The Lindsay Lohan Parent Trap?
No.
Okay, good.
Duh.
Well, okay.
Make me smack you with your Ronald McDonald microphone. For corn's sake. What would Stubbs say? There's a lot of stuff. There's I'm doing an adventure show. Shocking, but true. I was like, why not do what I want and get paid for it? I mean, I want to go to war zones. I want to live in a yurt. I want to be in Tibet with the, you know, like fighting with the Nepalese. I want to do what it takes to just go anywhere and see everything. And there's still a lot more to do.
So what
I'll probably wind up protesting, you know, the anti-gay sentiment in Russia and wind up in a jail there because I'm going to go there in like 3 months. We'll see how that goes.
That is a very bold move.
End up in some gulag somewhere. God, that would suck. North Korea does stress me out. But I would hope if Kim Jong-un is listening, if he would like to invite me there, I would go. But you know what was amazing about that whole thing when Dennis Rodman went? Like, they curated, like, people outside playing. They curated billboards that showed happy people. Like, literally, everywhere they drove, they scripted life to happen.
Oh, my God.
Fascinating. And my other favorite thing about Kim Jong-un is that The Onion twice now, they've done things on him. Or I'm sure they've done more than one or two. But the big one last year was... he won, The Onion said, Kim Jong-un wins People's Sexiest Man Alive, you know, cover. And that was splashed all over the front page in North Korea as if that was the God's honest truth, which is amazing.
I feel like maybe they don't know about The Onion in North Korea.
No, but Kim Jong-un does believe he is, in fact, the sexiest man alive. I do maintain the higher the kicks of any army, the crazier those people are.
That's actually a real...
Like, you're kicking real high, you are nuts.
Yeah, you're up for some shit.
You're up for some shit.
Yeah.
Like, you got some high kicks.
What do you intend? What would you want to do in North Korea?
Hopefully not get stuck in a North Korean prison, because that would also suck. Hard labor camp. These are my fears. This is why, I've finagled my way into the Pentagon, the CIA, the White House. I'm a finagler. I finagled my way into Air Force Two. Very cool.
Why has the government not tried to turn you into some...
To stop me?
No, they're like, we can't contain her. We must...
We must put her to work. Because I think usually for things like that, they tend to get white males from Yale or Harvard.
I don't know why.
I know, it's so boring.
You have so much more life experience than
and
someone who's
been to
Yale.
And I can be anywhere and do anything, and I have an excuse for all of it, just because I want to. I've met some fascinating people.
There's this like La Femme Nikita sort of a...
And I shoot guns, so yes, there is quality too. Naturally, I do, of course. Well, I shot a lot in movies, so I thought, well, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to be really good at this.
And can you disassemble a rifle and put it back together?
Not a rifle. I'm not a rifle person. Rifles, like, it would be inconvenient to go around with a rifle.
What's your gun of choice?
Beretta.
Mm-hmm.
And I like Sig Sauers a lot.
All right. I don't know anything about guns, so I'm just going to say that.
I don't own one, though. I'm Irish. We're prone to melancholy. It's not a smart idea.
Oh, no.
We're a melancholy sort.
Well, it's nice to recognize that about yourself.
I know my limits. How to keep myself safe from me.
But then the Irish. Are you 100% Irish?
I'm probably like 80%, and then the other percent is English and French.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, so you're in the same sector.
We're the land of the small nose, people. Like, if you are from here, you will have a small nose and white skin, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything about your personality that you would change if you could?
I wish I would have rebelled sooner. And I'm not even rebelling. It's just ownership, really. It's just ownership of who I am. I wish I would have woken up sooner, but I couldn't. I wasn't in a position to. I would have gone crazy. I was going crazy. I had to go to hypnotherapy like twice a month because I was having panic attacks, and I couldn't, because when you're on a show, you're contractually obligated basically to not travel for 9 months.
Oh my God. So you're basically, your core directive was being violated because
every day I could tell you what I was doing at 6:01 AM, 6 months in advance. And that for my brain was hell on earth.
Oh my.
Literally. It was the worst kind of situation for my brain. Yeah.
How long did you do Charmed?
5 years.
Oh, that's a lot.
Every time we got renewed, I would cry. Like, cry. And, well, what happened is I was only supposed to be on it for 2 years, and I doubled the ratings, which was great, and I had a really fun time for those 2 years. It was fine. And then I was like, okay, I can do this. I'm out. And then the lawyers, as it turned out, the shyster lawyer had signed a 5-year deal without my knowing, and they re-upped the other two girls, the studio. Oh, the ratings are so high. Would you like to sign on again for 3 years? Which then effectively locked me into the 5. And demons, lots of demons. I talk to a lot of demons. I'll meet people who are like, I was a guest star. I'm like, did I kill you? They're like, yes.
So when you finished Charmed, was that when you took off? That's when you took off.
I did a Tarantino movie and a Rodriguez movie, yeah. And then I peaced out.
That was it.
That was the tipping point. I'm on a Tarantino set and was like, what? And everybody else was so grateful and happy to be there. And part of me was grateful, certainly. And he's amazing to watch work, but I just wasn't like feeling the whole thing. I think I was just done, and I just wanted to go and fly and be free. And so I did.
And was your plan ever to come back, or did you eventually just go, fuck it, I'll just go
back? I always kept a house here, which was dumb fiscally. I should have probably not. I think I kept a house here because I had 2 Boston Terriers. I would come back like every 10 days. I would make it for about 3 days for like have a reaction to Los Angeles and leave again. I was like, I gotta get out of here. It didn't occur, but I could never figure out where else I wanted to actually live. Where am I going to go? Like North Dakota? What? I hate cold weather.
So did you just spin the globe and poke your finger on it and go?
Yes. I literally cannot tell you where I'll be in a week from now. I mean, I might be in Paris or New York, but from there, I want to go out to the Loire Valley and visit some of the chateaus and the things. But I'm going to do it like, you know, with my farmer friend out there who's got a hay baler. He's going to take me around.
Where?
So, I mean, I roll with the people that are like, they seem like the fancy people, but I'm just as comfortable on a donkey cart because I've done that too.
Where is someplace that you haven't been yet that you want to go?
Ooh, Kazakhstan. I would love to go to Iran, but I fear that wouldn't end well.
Do you ever want to go?
I want to go to Beirut.
Mm-hmm.
I do want to go to Israel. Maybe it's not the best time.
Would you ever want to go to like Antarctica and just like?
Okay. I don't agree with cruises normally because they just look like a bat, like panic. That just looks like you cannot get out of this thing.
Oh yeah.
That just looks like a nightmare. Plus, I've been told Actually, it was on that I'm a waste of a buffet because I don't eat enough. So I just thought, man, cruises. No, but there is a cruise through Alaska that I want to do, that just to see all the icebergs. And I've done hear that one's insane. Is it beautiful?
It's nice. I mean, the thing about these cruise ships is they're so fucking big.
Well, I want to get a small one.
Oh, okay.
I don't want to get some monster situation.
I was going to say, then you wouldn't feel so trapped.
On a big one?
Yeah.
Oh, you feel less trapped?
Of course.
Oh.
Because it's just...
I thought there's more people
to hide
from. No,
but there's a ton of space.
But there's more people to hide from.
There are more people. Yeah.
And what about that whole thing where they're always vomiting and getting diarrhea? That, like, there's that.
I think that's only happened maybe 5 times on one cruise line.
In the past couple years.
I think that was very specific.
Yeah. Like, can you imagine everybody puking off the rail? And they have buckets for number two in the hall. I mean, no.
Yeah.
No, no, no.
But that could happen on a small ship, too.
I've never heard of it.
Well.
So you do cruise?
I don't cruise. I don't cruise that often. I don't have a lot of time to do that stuff. You would hate my life because my life is so
regimented.
It's so regimented, and I'm in the same place Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, roughly the same place. Like, my life is very scheduled, but I'm very comfortable that way.
That's
I kind of like the pattern. I like the pattern.
I like not having patterns.
I don't know what to do with free time. You actually...
free time isn't really free in a way because...
Because Paul Allen's going to play with his band.
Well, that's different. Yeah. That's like I said, that's a high price of admission. And I don't even like Windows, so there.
Oh, shit!
Snaps. Total Mac girl.
So, what's good advice that you could give to someone who does not love being alone with their thoughts?
Who does not love it?
Yeah. I feel like that's why people do most of the crazy shit that they do. Like, that's why people get addicted to things. That's why people...
I think quickly, so luckily I can think while I'm doing things. But I do... the power went out in my house, and that's when I had the epiphany. I'm like, oh my God, I hate acting. Oh my God, I've always hated acting. Oh my God, I hate fantasy. Holy shit.
A light went off.
A major light. And it wasn't that I hated acting. It was just I hated... Like, I saw the 7 years and I was like, oh, this is what I was running from. And I don't have to do it on those terms. So just if you're scared of being alone with yourself, I would suggest smoking weed and just chill out. Put on some nice music. It's okay.
God,
it's okay to not be busy.
Oh, what? No.
Yeah, no.
What are you talking about?
I do I have 400 things that I do at one time, but it's really fun. It's fun. It's fun and challenging, you know. I mean, I was in Toronto for 26 hours last week and then did 10 talk shows and came back and did a bunch of others, whatever work here. And you just switch gears. You do all of it.
You have a lot of energy.
You just handle it. I pretend. No, I guess I don't know. I get 8 hours of sleep, so that's
good. Do you really?
Yeah. I love sleep.
What's that like?
You don't sleep?
No, I sleep for 5 hours.
6 hours is like a bete noir. 6 hours ruins my entire day. 3 hours, I'm better on 3 and 5 than I am on six. 8, 10 is too much and I'll sleep for 2 days straight.
Yep.
That would never happen in your world, would it?
No, no. Any time that I've ever been able to sleep for a long period of time, I just feel groggy all day.
Yeah.
My body has dictated how much it wants me to sleep, no matter how much I protest.
Do you need more?
I guess I don't.
You don't.
It would just be nice to not wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Ugh, I woke up at 5 the other day. There was absolutely nothing to do. It was so boring.
The silence is so loud.
No, I was doing a lot of things, but then there's so many times that you actually have to make business calls or things like this, and there's nobody to talk to because all the people in LA don't get into their offices till 10 a.m.
Right.
So there's a stretch of and I can't write in the morning because I'm busy trying not to throw up because I'm awake too early.
Right. You're very busy trying not to throw up.
I'm very busy. That was my acting in the morning is basically consists of me trying not to throw up for the first 2 hours.
So that's what happens if you don't get enough sleep.
No, that's what happens when I get up early.
Oh.
Doesn't matter how much I sleep.
See, that...
It's the death of me. I'm a night owl. I just even if I'm really tired, the second the night comes and I wake up, love it.
Do you...
There's nobody to talk to then either.
No. What do you do? Do you go online?
I read a lot.
Are you said you're a Mac person. Do you enjoy the internet or do you not enjoy the internet?
When I take Ambien, I order really weird things online. So apparently part of me really enjoys the internet. I bought a car from Japan without remembering it for 2 weeks. Yeah.
And did it show up?
It did.
And so,
and does it drive on the wrong side? Yes. And it was a concept car, so it doesn't actually exist. So it had to be registered and insured in Florida as a golf cart. I had to hire a lawyer to go through all 50 states to like, it's a damn cute car.
So in a way, these type of weird ambient purchases are like you giving presents to your future self.
Right. And they show up. I got a unicorn head the other day. I got a triple XL sweatshirt with a kitten on it. I order some, I'm like, what? Like, I'm trying to follow the track, like the thought process. But it's an expensive, when I travel and jet lag, that's the only time I take it because you need to get back into the rhythm. But that's when I buy really weird things. I don't eat. I don't go out and do that stuff. But, you know, I buy online. And I've saved my password and things on apparently many weird. And I get like, I get weird boxes of, I got a porcelain Christmas tree with a squirrel on top from Enid, Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. Somebody on eBay.
Yep. You might have to change your passwords to protect yourself from Ambien Rose.
Ambien Rose is expensive. Ambien Rose is an expensive girl.
So the movie is...
Dawn.
Is called Dawn.
Set in 1961. I wanted to explore girl politics in that era. What happens when a girl is societally and maternally conditioned to behave in a certain way? And then what happens when a lamb meets a wolf and you've been conditioned?
How many times have you had to say that in the last couple of weeks?
Actually, I just found it a way to actually say it succinctly for the first time.
Just now?
I'm a really bad explainer.
That was a good explaining.
Thank you. I'm really, really bad at summarizing.
It didn't sound like it.
That's
that.
Awesome. That actually was the first time. I've had those thoughts, but never put in a sentence where it actually made total
I'm
sense.
I'm honored that I could be here for this moment.
It was a big moment for me. Thank you. It's only taken me like, you know, since Sundance. What's that, 5 months, 6 months? It's only taken me since then.
I'm surprised that the publicist has not written these down. I'm like, okay, this is what we're going to
do. Because I don't like
on.
That kind of stuff.
No. Nope, she didn't write it down. Arms crossed. She's not writing shit
like,
down.
Mm-hmm. Nope. You on your own.
So where, what stage is the film at now?
The stage of the film at now, it just finished its run because it has to, the Academy has all these funny rules. So it has to, Sundance chose it to put in theaters this fall and winter, which is great. So it's playing all around the country, but it has to be an Oscar or an Academy sanctioned theater and it has to be exhibited with a paid admission for a week. So that's why I did a festival. I was like, well, it seems a little arrogant for people just to come downtown for a short film. I'm going to give them something else and discuss film with them and discuss like in Parent Trap, pay attention to the production design. Carrie, pay attention to Brian De Palma's tracking shots. Pay attention to like a lot of stuff. So I would talk before the films and discuss the background of the film and the art of it really and what we're there seeing. And I think it makes for a better viewing experience.
What are you going to do if you win an Oscar?
Take over the world. Go to Guam.
Is that going
to
be weird?
I'm not even going there, but it really is to be in a position where you're even being considered is pretty cool. Because it's more just a part of history. And for me, I'm like a huge history buff. I mean, that was the best thing about Charmed was shooting on the Paramount lot. You know, being under those, like the same stages and seeing the same sights and having the same sounds as your predecessors from, you know, the 1920s is pretty intense and pretty special to be in a part of that. You know, it's a pretty special thing to be part of that history.
Do you fear or you worry? Well, you don't fear anything, it sounds like. But I mean, at what point do you think the directing could get to be this kind of trap that acting became? Because it's clear that you're not in that space right now.
I don't think it would become a trap because it's my own voice for the first time.
Right.
So, no. I have 3 movies in the works right now, directing.
Feature length?
Feature. And the thing is that the short, like when you see it, you'll see it's basically a full 3 acts in 17 minutes, which is very difficult to do. But I'd only seen 2 short films before I directed it, so I wasn't trying to model it on anything I'd seen. It has the tension of Night of the Hunter, the loneliness of an Edward Hopper painting. I wanted that. And I cribbed the production design, which I did myself, all the furniture, all the everything from the original Parent Trap California section. So, you know, it's, no, I roll hard.
In the rolling hard, are you good at delegating or do you feel like you have to do everything yourself?
I can just do it faster.
But you can't do everything.
I can't do everything. But no, you make great hires and you work with them and you know, pre-production is really important. And a lot of people speed through pre-production and that's where you work out a lot of those kinks. So once you're on set, it's pretty smooth. You have to do solid pre-production.
Do you think you'd want to direct like a $200 million film or is that just too much bullshit to deal with?
It would be very, I'd be hard pressed to see, I mean, maybe like a Zero Dark 30 or something like that, but I'd be very hard pressed to see what kind of story they could come up with at that price that would interest me remotely.
And if you did, you'd have to listen to Paul Allen's band like this.
Again. This time I'll make him listen to me, knock him off the stage, and be like, listen, I got this mic, babe.
Are you performing anywhere around town?
I have actually, that is one of my fears. I'm terrified of singing in public.
What?
I have no problem singing like right now. I have no problem doing that.
But in front of people?
I don't know what it's like to stand on a stage and not have something being somebody else.
Oh, well.
Thank. It's like really weird. Now I have to.
You have no choice.
It does. I might throw up first, but I'll act my way through it.
But once you get past the throw up hump, then you're good.
Like at Outfest when you saw me, I was in a throw up hump.
Well, but you didn't.
But you would never know.
You didn't. It didn't seem that way at all.
No, and even on a red carpet, my knee bounces underneath my dress. It's like shakes.
You got laughs. You got laughs at that.
Did I?
You got laughs.
Because when you're on stage, you just kind of hear like a, like in your head, you don't really.
Yeah, but it's, you know. The same thing that got you out of the hull of a Saudi Arabian wooden ship
got me out of that.
Would get you out of that. Like you would have an. You should.
Oh, I won't. Yeah, I learned how to walk in high heels because I had to, because I was going down a runway and I was like, God damn it, I'm not going to fall.
But then if you do, then you just get up and you're like, all right.
Which I've done a million times too.
Which is fine.
And that's what we do, and that's what humans do.
I feel like, not that it's my business, I feel like you have to sing in public now because you've done most of the things that people are afraid of.
True. Balls.
Damn it.
Damn it, Jim.
But damn it, Jim.
Damn it.
I'm a doctor, not a lounge singer.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I'm kind of a lounge singer.
Kind of a lounge singer. Bubbles McCoy. My nom de guerre.
Bubbles McCoy, tying it back around.
That's right.
That's a
back.
That's a lovely. That I feel like that is sticking the landing for the end of the podcast. We've been talking for an hour and 6 minutes.
Oh wow! But I could talk to you all day, and I'm sure. What are you writing? Your friend here is writing like a.
He makes show notes.
Oh, okay, this sucked on this show. Don't do it again on the next one. Is that your show note? We're talking to his producer.
No. Oh, Kyle's not
Cruises.
A producer. Don't elevate his position.
I don't know what. Sorry, Kyle. You've been demoted in the conversation.
I have to keep Kyle in his cage, and every time I got to feed him or give him his medicine, he tries to attack me.
Right? That's mm-hmm. why you have to do, like with Sasquatch, you have to put some clothes over your arms before you get around his mouth.
That's what I have to do. Kyle also looks like a Sasquatch.
Well, yes.
Like if you saw Kyle just naked in the woods, you'd be like, that looks about right.
That looks about right. I would grow out your beard a little bit more and a little rougher. That's good. But I think you could go full Squatch.
Would you do the full Squatch, Kyle?
Yeah.
Can you? Do you have chest hair?
I do.
Can you somehow merge your neck and chest hair? Because that'd be full Squatch.
Just like all the way.
Have you ever seen those guys with the t-shirts and their hair like meets together and it sticks out? No, you've got a nice sprinkling.
I have a good amount of chest hair, but it's not too.
It's not aggressive.
But there's more than you think there's going to be.
Well, there's those guys at the public pool that you see and you're like, dear God,
yeah.
Like the back pelt. And you're like, come on,
right?
And then meanwhile, these are the kind of guys with stickers that say like, no fat chicks or something, right? Always those idiots.
And why don't those girls say no back hair?
Yeah. How about you, Squatch?
Yeah. Fucking jerks. Shave your back, Kyle.
Yeah. Shave your back, Kyle. God damn it. I was gonna That was like. What I was going to say before I was going to allow myself to come in here today.
Yeah.
Well, shave your back, Kyle. But I got caught up. I was too busy.
Well, at least it got out.
At least it got out.
I mean, at least you were able to get to that point at the end.
I'm sure you don't have back hair. You do?
It's weird. It's an island bread.
So.
My girlfriend makes fun of it.
I am a rock.
Kyle
has an
island of hair.
All right.
All right. Good to see you, Rose.
Good to see you, Chris.
Enjoy your burrito, everyone. Kyle, shave your back.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.